but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
When did it stop being so much fun? Or what should I say, when did sports lose its way in your mind? Was it the inclusion of gambling in our sports ecosystem? Got an indictment last week, 34 people, the FBI involved, the Department of Justice, your Blazers coach, Chauncey Billups, wrapped up in it, coming out of a courthouse. The NBA releasing a statement today to all 30 teams in the league saying, hey, gambling's a problem. Here are the trouble areas. I have a story today on johncanzano.com about Oregon State's athletic department. NIL collective problems. You got a deputy athletic director in Brent Blaylock who is negotiating his exit today with Oregon State. They are unwinding that Blueprint Sports deal. We'll talk about it on the show today. The college football playoff starting to get more serious this time of year. Is your team worth the damn? Is it in the hunt? What does San Diego State have to do to get to the playoff? What does Memphis have to do to get to the playoff? How about Oregon? Feels pretty serious, doesn't it? Not as fun. You got Dan Lanning after the Oregon victory in the rain against Wisconsin. Getting a little chippy with the reporters, asking about his backup quarterbacks. Truth be told, he's got a couple of backup quarterbacks, probably the number two and number three players on his depth chart, who are probably not interested in playing in the game because it would impact their eligibility and possible transfer status. So you've got, arguably, your quarterback two coming into the game in relief of Dante Moore, and nobody really knows or trusts that it's the second-best quarterback on the roster. Where's Austin Novus at? He warmed up for a second, and he didn't go into the game. Where's Luke Moga? He's on the sideline. He's in uniform, but he didn't get into the game. Dan Lanning after the game, getting a little testy with reporters, saying, you know, the fans should just be happy. Fans should just be happy because, you know, they won the game in the rain. And, you know, the backup quarterback has earned the reps. Good show today. We got great guests. We're going to be all over the place. We'll lead you right into Monday Night Football on this great Monday. Stephen Vaughn's in studio. Let me just ask you, Stephen, like, when did it get so serious? When, like, it doesn't seem as fun. It's supposed to be a diversion. And we have a bunch of coaches getting fired, a lot of them prematurely. It's not even November. We got a bunch of coaches fired, got a bunch of vacancies. Got a gambling scandal in the NBA with the erosion of trust of the product in the NBA. You got the league issuing a memo. Memos aren't fun. Dunks are fun. Home runs are fun. Touchdowns are fun. You know, we never put a memo on SportsCenter's play of the week or game of the week. But that's where we are. And coaches getting fired, it seems to be the new thing. Like, you know, mediocre coaching in the SEC. You've got a guy like Cam Newton talking about the coaching in the SEC and why you have to be on your stuff. Cam Lanning speaking about it as Brian Kelly's getting fired as well. So you tell me, when did it stop being as fun? When did it stop being as interesting to you, Stephen Vaughn?
You asked this question like right before the show, and it made me think, like, when did it really start? And maybe it... I kind of think it was when social media became a really big thing. And you know what? We get paid to give our opinions. And I'm not saying that's bad to have an opinion, but now everybody has an opinion. And it makes it, social media can really elevate it where there are a lot of people that are not very informed, have a very well-followed opinion. And it kind of influences a lot of different things. Like, look, I understand that this gambling scandal is huge. But now I keep seeing stuff about the Trailblazers, John, about how, you know, Tiago Splitter has really taken this team to a whole nother level. Well, you know what?
How many games have they played?
They played two with Tiago.
Next level stuff, man.
Chauncey Billups is what he did. This is what this team is doing because of Chauncey Billups, not because of Tiago Splitter, but because Chauncey Billups may or may not have, given information. Like, we just give it away, and that's what people are running with. We see people now, you know, talking about the gambling scandal of, oh, he was definitely, you know, rigging games. You can see in the subbing pattern. Well, everyone knew the Blazers were tanking too. Like, I just feel like sometimes we listen, and we're listening to the wrong people that aren't very informed on a lot of things. And there's so many more opinions now out there that you get caught in your own echo chamber. And now we're not hearing necessarily every opinion. We're just hearing the same opinions over and over. And it's easy. It's easy to not watch a game, John, and then just read a couple things, read a couple reports, and then act like you watched a game and then talk about it. And I think that's what we get nowadays. And for me, that's what I don't like, because I don't like that. I, as a guy who watches the Blazers and a guy who watches basketball, I can tell if you are watching the Blazers, you're watching basketball, and you actually didn't watch the game, I can kind of tell what you're talking about. So for me, that's the part that it kind of bothers me. And then I hear, you know, I see a lot of opinions that I don't necessarily agree with. I think they're way out of left field, and they're just trying to get interactions. And that's what bothers me, is when people are trying to, you know, farm that, the rage bait type of thing of just to get you mad. And I feel like that happens. And I feel like that happened with social media when it kind of popped off and became a real thing.
I keep looking at like this Blazers organization and this story with the gambling, and yeah, everybody's got an opinion. You know, the FBI puts the report out, the indictments are out there. You want to be fair to the people involved, but there's a certain element of what is going on with the NBA and what is going on with gambling that can't be ignored. And you can't ignore the fact that the NBA is in cahoots with these companies, these sports wagering companies, in the same way that the NFL, Major League Baseball is. You see the advertisements everywhere. You see the media entities that are covering the gambling stories also have, deals with sports wagering, entities. And so it's like, we're all kind of looking at this going, can you really trust it? I mean, hell, for crying out loud, you know, I'm sitting here going, this gambling's way into sports. And then I'm like, and here's our picks for the week. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, we're all kind of complicit in the muddying of these waters, but it doesn't feel like sports used to be the escape, and it used to feel a little simpler. And I probably live in a different space because I spent like the vast majority of the last 36 hours reporting this Oregon State story on Blueprint Sports. We're going to get to it in a second. But it's like, I find myself going, gosh, can we get back to talking about the games? Can we get back to talking about what we saw over the weekend? Can we get back to kind of treating it in a way where the, the product on the field is supposed to be the thing we focus on? But how can we get there if you got coaches who are getting indicted and you've got teams going, you know, we're going to fire our coach in October, like multiple teams firing their coaches in October because the expectation is that you have to win and you can't afford to go into a funk or into a losing streak. And so I do think like it's taken on a life of its own, sort of the reporting and the coverage of sports that goes beyond the games themselves. And I do wonder about fans, because I think fans, knowledgeable fans, want to know what's going on. They value to know what's happening with their team. Of course, you're a Blazer fan. If you want to know if, you know, did Chauncey Billups leak information? Did he change lineups? Did he not play guys? Or, you know, how bad is this? As a Blazer fan, you want to know that. And Clippers fans want to know, like, did Kawhi Leonard have a special deal with this third party, right? That becomes a big story. And in the NFL, it becomes so much about rules. And in the SEC, you got a referee who's suspended. And then in, you know, the Pac-12's getting sued and suing the Mountain West. You have, Oregon sitting there with one loss, and everybody's going, I don't know if they can get in the playoff if they lose another game because of the strength of their schedule. Like, it's their fault that Penn State turned out to be not so good. I'm just left kind of going, hey, wait a minute. They played some games. Can we talk about how good San Diego State is for a second? Can we talk about how good Oregon looked and kind of gritting out a victory in unsavory conditions or can we talk about, you know, Washington State, what a good story that is with Jimmy Rogers, the coach there. They're 4-4. They beat Toledo over the weekend. Big win for Washington State. They look good. Like, can we talk about some of that? so that we can get a break from the nonsense that just is incessant.
Because I'm with you, because I would love to talk about the actual games, but it seems like now fans don't necessarily want to hear about the actual games. Like, what
do you mean? What do you mean by that?
I feel like they like to hear the the debate, the GOAT debates or the CFP debates. Like, you talk about San Diego State. They're probably not going to make the college football playoff, but they're 6-1, but they're not ranked, and so no one's going to talk about them. They're going to talk about, well, the SEC has, you know, 7 ranked teams in the top 15, and we're going to hear about that all the time. Like, when did that change to where we only talk about the very top of the top and we don't talk about anything else?
Well, I think that specific instance that you're talking about has to do with money. It has to do with the SEC being the media partner of ESPN. And how often does, you know, the SEC and ESPN walk hand in hand? It's all day long, 24/7 on the Sports and Entertainment News Network. It relates to how frequently the SEC teams get picked for College Game Day. It relates to, like, when the rankings come out for the CFP, we get those annual rankings that'll come out down the stretch. All the chatter before and after that, the shoulder programming will have to be about the promotion of the SEC. They have a vested business relationship and a vested interest in the SEC teams being higher ranked, being involved in the playoff, making more money, being better, getting better recruits. And so you see a lot of that banging of the drum. It's no different than when you turn on ABC or NBC or CBS or CNN and you can kind of feel, like Fox or whatever you're watching. You know, you're watching that during the election. You can feel what the slant of their coverage is. And you kind of have to know that. You have to, you know, you kind of go into it going, okay, this is the conservative leading channel. Okay, this is the liberal leading channel. And I have to kind of, you know, frame what I'm about to see through that lens. You have to do that, I think, with a little bit of the SEC. Now, if San Diego State doesn't come from like a shabby media market. It's Southern California. It's not LA, though. And we know that because when the Pac-12 was trying to hang on to the LA schools, whatever, it was going to add San Diego State. San Diego State was coming in. If the Pac-12 had held itself together, it was going to be San Diego State and SMU. It would have been fine. Wasn't a bad plan. But once Oregon and Washington left, everybody ran for the hills. And, you know, Arizona's athletic director at the time told me that. They said, if Oregon and Washington leave, everyone's running for the hills. And in fact, they did. And so I think, you know, as I look back at that, I go, okay, that was part of it too. That whole realignment thing became such an ongoing story. And you can't ignore it because it's so important to what's happening. You can't ignore that Oregon left and went to the Big Ten. That's an important development, as was the LA schools in Washington. You also can't ignore that LSU has, you know, gotten rid of a coach that it doesn't think could help get it to the promised land. And, you know, big, Lane Kiffin has got his pick of jobs. He's going to have, you know, the LSU and Florida and Auburn jobs all calling his name. If I'm James Franklin, I'm out there going, hey, this is not bad for me to be on the open market. Look at all these openings. I got a bunch of coaches in the group of five, group of six that are having good seasons. The business of sports, NIL, the lawsuits, the transfer portal, gambling has dominated the news cycle. Realignment dominated the news cycle. And you're right. Like if we could just for a moment talk about like what is great about sports right now. Sean Lewis at San Diego State, Stephen, that guy's having a great season. That looks like a great hire. But the problem and what I fear for with San Diego State is like everyone's going, oh, this is going to be great. San Diego State's got all this momentum. They're going to come into the New World Pac-12, and it's going to be them and Boise State, you know, playing at the top of that conference. But you kind of know what's going to happen here. Sean Lewis is going to get job offers. And then San Diego State is going to be faced with, oh, they're doing a coaching hire, and is this a good time to be doing a coaching hire as you're switching to a new conference? I can see that coming down the pipeline. And if I'm J.D. Wicker, the athletic director at San Diego State, I am moving really hard right now to kind of lock up Sean Lewis long term and make him a forever guy in San Diego because it's such a good hire.
And I, you know, I'm still relatively new in the news media here. You know, I've been for like 7 years, I would think. But before that, I look at the Oregon situation with the backup quarterback. I know the backup quarterback is important, and he actually had to play against Wisconsin. But when did we care so much about who the backup quarterback was, and we just didn't say, all right, you know, it wasn't a great looking win against Wisconsin, but you won 21-0, you got out of there. Like the talking point after the game was like, well, the backup quarterback, Brock Thomas, is he actually the back? Like, shouldn't you have just talked about like the actual play on the field and not worry about what's going on? I understand Dan Lanning's just frustration with everything, with all these questions coming about the backup quarterback. It's like, who cares, man? Like, he played well. He was 4-for-4. Like, he's the guy that came in the game, and we won the game with him. Like, I feel like we're always looking for negativity almost after every single game, no matter what, instead of looking at anything positive.
I think there is a scrutiny, and you hit on that vocal minority part. Everybody's got a Twitter account. Everybody's got access to Dan Lanning. Everyone has access to a reporter. And, you know, I try to tell my kids this, my three daughters this, like, you know, there's 8 or 10 people on social media that can sound like an army, you know, because they're loud and they keep asking questions. They get their buddies together. They all sort of tweet at you the same thing. And you're like, okay, you guys are like, there's three of you tweeting the same thing. There's like a million people not tweeting at you. But it can seem pretty loud when people are like, oh, what's going on with the Oregon backup quarterback situation? And I don't blame fans for wondering, like, why isn't Austin Novosad playing? Like, you know, Oregon's invested in that guy. Where's Luke Moga? Like, why are they going to the guy who everyone thought would be like the number four, quarterback? And the easy answer is it's probably related to the portal. It's probably related to eligibility. These players probably, you know, made a deal with Oregon and said, look, we'll play to a certain extent, but only use us if you need us. If Dante Moore goes down, maybe one of them comes in and says, okay, I'll burn my eligibility and I'll play. But they're not going to just come in and take three snaps in a game or even, you know, go 4-for-4 as a passer. The backup did on Saturday.
To that point, John, has the NIL and the portal ruined college football?
I think it's hurt it. I think there's a number of things that have spoiled it. I think the portal and NIL has made it harder for fans. It's great for the players. You know, the salaries are great for coaches, but I think it's made it harder for fans. 503-417-7575 is the number. Let's go out to the phones. Paul, welcome.
Hey, thanks, John. This is a great topic. I think for me, the main purveyor of reducing my joy in sports has been technology proliferation across all sports. Analytics, which are so big now in baseball, players get reduced to numbers, averages. There's no humanism anymore. I think the ability to have real-time betting is all a derivative of technology. Instant replay has completely, in my opinion, destroyed the NBA. It takes away all the rhythm from the game, all the organic energy that fans bring to the arena when they are either cheering or booing because of a good play or bad play. That all dissipates, and that's due to technology. But baseball endorsing robotic umpires and having a clock now, I know it's popular because the game gets sped up, but baseball is supposed to be this pastime of lazy afternoons with no clocks and still using wooden bats. I just see technology across the board. You know, social media is part of that, has ruined sports in general.
And appreciate that.
One other thing is this winning at all costs mantra, I feel, has really come to the forefront in the past 20 years. I think you wrote an article many years ago about Mike Riley, and I think he stated he's trying to turn boys into men in Corvallis. And I thought, God, that's the type of person I would like my kids to be coached by. But that doesn't matter anymore. It's all about winning, and if you're not winning, you're gone. And I think that's another sad part.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, like, Mike Riley had a clause in his contract at Oregon State. All he had to do was win 6 games. He got an extra year of extra year on his contract. Every time he won 6 games, it was like a lifetime deal. All you had to do is be bowl eligible. You can coach forever. Let's go to Bobby, who's in Eugene, listening on Fox Sports Eugene. Bobby, welcome.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, I just wanted to tell you, I'm a truck driver. I've been, you know, out here going all over these states and listening to a lot of programs. And I just basically called to give you some love, bro. I love your show. Your guy you have working with you there is great. I love when your wife comes on. It's just real refreshing to listen to you, and I just wanted to shout out and give you that love, man.
Oh, thank you, man. Thank you for what you do, yeah. And thanks for being out there. I appreciate that. And look, I've been thinking about this a lot. You know, I write a column at johnconzano.com. I do this show that people are listening, listening to, and I never take it for granted that you're out there and you're listening wherever you may be. Like, you have, you know, say stay on the airlines, you have a choice. You can fly wherever you want to fly and with whatever carrier you want. and you make me part of your day, and that means a lot to me. And it means a lot to me when people come up to me in the gym or the grocery store or you know, at the school pickup line, and they're like, hey, I read you or I listen to you, and it just means so much. And I've morphed a little bit into doing more social media on, you know, obviously on Instagram and TikTok. If you're there, you should check it out. But also the YouTube channel, the Bald Faced Truth YouTube channel, will be doing more of that in the coming days and weeks. And I only tell you all these things because I want you to be able to find me, you know, wherever you may be. Like, I'll meet you where you are. And if it's if you're a truck driver and you need to be here, great. You want to listen to the podcast? If you can't get it live, great. You know, read the column. If you miss the show, great. You know, I think the more contact points we can have, the better. But it means a lot to me that, you know, look, I've gotten better as a host over the years. I hope I continue to get better every day. I've always been interested in trying to make the show the best it possibly can be. But it means a lot when you get a call like that from Bobby and Eugene. So, Bobby, thanks for being out there. I appreciate that. All right, we're going to talk about Blueprint Sports and Oregon State. Steven, do you understand what Blueprint Sports does?
Sort of. I from what I understand, they help with NIL deals, and that's about all I know.
They assist with NIL collectives. The rules changed kind of with the House versus the NCAA settlement. Now the universities can be directly involved. So a lot of these NIL collectives have gone in-house. But companies like Blueprint Sports and others, there are others like Lockerverse as well, they act as these third-party entities. So you don't have to hire like a whole staff to do the fundraising and operate your collective. You can just partner with them. They do it. Seemingly they get a cut, sometimes 25%. Up to so much dollars, 50% up to so much dollars or whatever. And, you know, you cut whatever deal you can get and then you, let them go do the work. And the idea is that they can bring you dollars you didn't otherwise get while also sort of managing your day to day of your NIL collective with your existing fan base. Well, this deal that Oregon State put together with Blueprint Sports is a bad deal. Looked like a good deal. We even had Brent Blaylock, the athletic director, deputy athletic director at Oregon State on the show a couple weeks ago, and he explained it, and he made this comment about, hey, how the first $750,000 that comes in is untouched. All of it gets to athletes. And it turns out that the contract doesn't quite say that. I am told today that Brent Blaylock and Oregon State had a meeting at 11 a.m., and they are negotiating the departure of Brent Blaylock. They are negotiating how that will be messaged publicly. And then I am told tomorrow, Blueprint Sports and Oregon State expected to announce tomorrow that they are unwinding that deal. Oregon State buying its way out of that deal, probably going to run its collective itself, or maybe end up with Lockerverse or someone else. Daniel Libet of Sportico had some reporting on that front. He's going to join us next. Stick around.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
So much fun. Sports. When did it stop being so much about the sports? We're going to talk with Daniel Libet of Sportico coming up here in a minute. Sportico had the story, they had the contract between Blueprint Sports and Oregon State that showed it was a bad deal. They released that a few weeks ago. And then the mechanism that I call, if you are somebody who's ever had a sink at your house that has a broken faucet, you ever had one of those? Needed a repair? And the sink just goes drip, 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 and nobody seems to want to drip, drip, deal with what's going on, drip, drip, and nobody seems to want to get the thing fixed. And you end up in a situation where you have this drip, drip still going on all this time. That's what happened at Oregon State with this Blueprint Sports deal. It wasn't a great deal at face value. The deputy athletic director, Brent Blaylock, who engineered the deal, I think there was an ego issue going on here at Oregon State. I think Kyle Bjornstad, who built Damnation Collective, really loved Damnation Collective. Like, he built that thing. It was grassroots. He cared about it. He's a former Oregon State athlete. He was doing this because he loves his school. And he built this collective, and then the House versus the NCAA settlement comes in, and suddenly all these collectives are kind of being absorbed by third parties and taken in-house at the schools because they want to use them. They don't want to lose the recurring donations, and they don't want to lose that grassroots feel that makes it feel local. But you can't have, like, a staff. You can't hire, like, four people to do what a collective's supposed to do. And some of these third-party entities do a lot more than that. They hold events. They throw events. They're involved in marketing and sponsorship deals and NIL collectives. And so there's layers to this stuff. And what happened with Blueprint Sports in Oregon State is a cautionary tale. I think there's some of this that's sign of the times. It's complicated. It's new. Some of it is you've got a deputy AD and Brent Blaylock at Oregon State who I think really wanted to show that he knew the NIL space and he could matter there. And then you have Kyle Bjornstad, who just, you know, ran the collective and he loved it so much that it broke his heart, I think, when Blueprint Sports came in and he found out, hey, this is a bad deal. Part of the problem that I saw developing was Blaylock was kind of forced out front to talk about this NIL deal. And he was, you know, he even came on the show, and I think paraphrasing here, to what he said was, hey, the first $750,000 goes to Oregon State. And then, you know, the money beyond that $750,000 limit gets split 75-25 in favor of Blueprint. And then everything over $1.15 million is split 50-50. But as you read the contract, it doesn't quite say that. It doesn't quite say that this first $750,000 is untouched and guaranteed. In fact, there's a management fee that is substantial that Oregon State was paying. And so as I laid out today in the piece at johnconzano.com, Blaylock is negotiating his exit at Oregon State. There was a meeting at 11 o'clock this morning. Scott Barnes was in on it. Some university officials were in on it. I assume the general counsel of the school was in on it. They're fashioning Blaylock's departure. They're going to come out at some point and say he's left the university. They parted ways. They wish him well, all that. Also, this deal with Blueprint Sports is being unwound. And I am told that it will likely be announced tomorrow that Blueprint and Oregon State have terminated that deal. I want to bring the guy on from Sportico who brought this story to the forefront by publishing that contract, because without it, it doesn't happen. Daniel Libet of Sportico joining us now. Daniel, I appreciate you, man.
Good to be with you. Appreciate it.
All right, give me an idea. You see this unfolding. The drip, drip, drip of the faucet happens over several weeks after you put that contract out. Do you expect it ends up in this place where Oregon State is kind of quietly backing away from the deal? Or from your vantage point, what's that look like?
Yeah, well, I think the only thing that I was gleaning was I had reached out. I've continued to report on Blueprint kind of writ large, and I had reached out to Oregon State last week asking for just kind of a generic comment on the current state of things going forward, and there was silence. So I thought that was a bit strange. It was sort of teed up for an opportunity to say, yes, we're so happy, and reiterate all the things that they had told folks like yourself and other reporters in Oregon. But yeah, I mean, this has all kind of been a product of miscalculation, certainly with public relations. I mean, keep in mind, the university announces this deal. The deal, as is stipulated in the agreement itself, is subject to public disclosure. If you exist in college athletics today, you have to assume that at some point somebody's going to, if not many people, are going to FOIA your contract and publish the terms. And they seem so ill-prepared to defend it or to even really understand it. I was a little surprised. I mean, again, a lot of this context at Oregon State and fan discontent with various things in the athletics department. I assume in happier times, maybe this deal doesn't really ignite the same sort of attention and reaction that it is right now. But yeah, it even caught me a little bit by surprise about when I published my story some weeks ago, how it really kind of set everything on fire in Corvallis and the surrounding parts, because this sounds to me like the kind of agreement we're seeing a lot of. It mimics multimedia rights agreements. So it doesn't, you know, in the larger context, it doesn't seem so shocking, but it's a good opportunity for all of us to take a step back and look at these relationships between third parties and university athletic departments.
Yeah, you've got these athletic departments that are generating hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue, and you have the idea of higher education and higher learning going on in the background, and those missions fly in the face of each other. But how many of these schools, Daniel, how unusual is this? How many schools are going out and getting a third party? How many are trying to do it themselves? You know, there's a Division Street at Oregon. That's a different animal. The Boulevard at SMU is a different animal. But, yeah. You know, the space that Lockerverse and Blueprint Sports and some others are playing in, how prevalent is it?
Well, I mean, just in general, I mean, college sports is so addicted to outsourcing. And this has been true forever. I mean, I feel like most times I'm writing a story about a school deciding to outsource something where there's a question of what's the returns, what's the need. I mean, so many times in general, and I'll get kind of back to your more specific question, but so many times in general, I mean, athletic directors' jobs are more contingent and their sort of careers are more contingent with the relationships that they've built with third parties than with the relationships they've built on their own campuses or among their peers. And so there's nothing unusual about seeing the third party creep for NIL. I'll tell you an anecdote, which is more than ironic right now. In the early days of NIL, back in the summer of 2021, I wrote a story for Sportico about the few universities that were resisting hiring, you know, NIL education consultants. This was the first iteration of this. You know, the NCAA was about to adopt its interim policy. Schools were hiring companies like Open Doors and Altius and Influencer to provide them education on something that hadn't existed, which was a sort of a fascination on its own. And there was a few schools that very proudly defied the trend and said, we don't need to go out and hire a third party. We can do this. We have expertise on our campus. We have business schools. We have a law school. We have tons of people. Why would we go farm this out? And I profiled one such school that was sort of resisting this trend. And that school was the University of Arizona, which had sort of created its own joint collaboration between athletics and its law school and its management college, and was very proud that they were not doing what everybody else was doing. And the person overseeing that program at the University of Arizona was its senior associate athletic director, Brent Blaylock, who gave me this great quote. I don't have it right in front of me, but essentially was like, we don't want to be client number 17 of 65 of a third party. This is something we can do all ourselves. So obviously, fast forward, you know, 4.5 years later, and here, you know, there is maybe scandal's too hard of harsh of a word, but there is a dilemma that is unfolded from, you know, Brent Blaylock's deciding and working to farm out these services to a third party. So, you know, in some cases, the addiction to farming out is so prevalent that even those who have at one point in their career testified to not doing it, ultimately, you know, find reason to do it at some point.
The contract, as you review it, it becomes evident that there's nothing in there that says Blueprint guarantees the first $750,000 will go to Oregon State Athletics untouched. There's a management fee in there. And yet it's how that was kind of presented as Oregon State, you know, paraded around after, you know, the documents came out. A little bit surprised to see that. Also hearing that that's how it was presented behind the scenes. Now, I want to give everybody the benefit of the doubt. I mean, is it possible these guys are just not reading the contract close enough or don't really know what they're signing? And, oh, if you know, if North Carolina State's in and Penn State's in, we're in too?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's certainly some version of that. I mean, again, no, Penn State's contract is behind a black box because the vagaries of public records law in Pennsylvania does not make their document subject North Carolina State, even though Blueprint has held them out as having a similar relationship with the company as Oregon State or Maryland did, North Carolina State does not have that kind of relationship at all. I mean, they have really no substantive direct relationship. I know Blueprint was endeavoring for that to be the case, but that wasn't the case. Similar with Arkansas. So it's really Maryland and Oregon States. And yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know who wrote this contract and who signed it, or if it was, you know, what the redlining looked like, but it certainly looks like a contract that was much more favorable to Blueprint than it was to the university. And that is a dereliction of duty in some respect for a school to sign something, at least purport that it has certain guarantees. When, to your point, yes, the $750,000 is mentioned once, and it has nothing. There's no caveat language about this being a guarantee or stipulated in order for the other parts of the terms to come into play. So yeah, I mean, I don't know exactly. You're better sourced up into the backstory than I am, but not a good job, to say the least.
I tell you what I think happened. Here's just you and I talking here with a lot of people listening, Daniel, but I think Brent Blaylock, the deputy AD, and Kyle Bjornstad, who had built Damnation Collective, didn't like each other. There was sort of a clash of ego there. They didn't get along. There was a lot of petty stuff that went on behind the scenes. You know, Bjornstad was named the general manager. Blaylock apparently refused to put general manager on his season credential, you know, kind of diminished him in that way. It's just, it was petty stuff like that. But I think Blaylock wanted to be the master of NIL ceremonies at Oregon State. And Bjornstad was sitting on the side, and he really cared about the collective. He wanted the best deal possible for Oregon State because he wanted his collective to live on. And I think Blaylock went with Blueprint because he had worked with Blueprint before at Arizona. And he didn't like Lockerverse was brought in by Bjornstad as, hey, here's another alternative. So I think they kind of wanted to be his thing. And I think you see that, you know, sometimes with ambition and ego in an athletic department where you got a deputy who wants to be a, you know, full AD someday. And I think it got off the rails. I think that's what happened. I don't think there was anything shady about it. I don't think he was getting a kickback like people have suggested that. I think it's just about ego. I think it's Game of Thrones and it's palace intrigue.
Well, and I would say too, and again, you know, going back to what I was saying before, the incentive structure that makes college athletic administrators care more about their relationships with third parties than with supporters of the current program, boosters, you know, well-intentioned collective operators, is part of the problem. And we see that manifest in, you know, a million different ways in various different athletic departments. I mean, again, yes, if your calling card is you've been the guru of NIL at an Oregon State, like that's something that you can take with you and build up to, you know, that your next job, a bigger job. And so it's clear why that would be important to someone like Brent Blaylock. But again, this is not in the interest of the university. It's not in the interest of the athletic department. Ultimately, wasn't in the interest of Brent Blaylock, given what has transpired now.
Daniel Libet, Sportico, keep doing what you're doing.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
You bet. There he goes. Public records guru, Daniel Libet. Good stuff there. Our Big Splash still ahead. Punch and Audio still ahead. Monday Night Football still ahead. I'm going to be interesting, entertaining. I'm going to tell stories. I want your calls. 503-417-7575. Putting a lot of pressure on myself today.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Halloween's coming up. Make sure you get the candy. Kids in the neighborhood, you want them to be good to you, be good to them. I want to go to the phone lines. 503-417-7575. We've got a lot to talk about. Oregon State's got a problem with Blueprint Sports. They are cutting bait. I'm told that deal will be unwound, or already has been unwound. It will be announced tomorrow that they are parting ways. They're going to be like, well, we have mutually decided to part ways. But the truth is, Oregon State is quietly backing away from Blueprint Sports. like it's at a cocktail party and Blue Sprint Sports just said something offensive. And they're going, okay, we're going to just kind of walk away over here. Don't make eye contact. And we're going to get away from them. So that's going on. I reported that earlier today. It was a busy kind of morning for me. I do thank the various media outlets out there that either retweeted it or took the time to credit me when they sort of reposted the story. Some did not. Some did not. And that's, you know, you guys know who they are. But that's okay. I had the goods this morning, Stephen. Do you have any questions about that deal? Because you seemed a little foggy on what Blueprint Sports did and what was going on. But if you have a question, I'm sure our listeners have questions.
Yeah, like I don't fully understand like how Blueprint Sports would be generating money for Oregon State. Like you talk about like they help with NIL. Like are they just helping athletes get deals with different businesses? Like for the actual NIL, like NIL is name, image, likeness. Like that's how you make your money. Yeah. It's not just pay for play. Like, are they literally like going out and helping them with businesses to get these type of deals? Like what is the buyout now for Oregon State? Like, I don't understand exactly what they do and why they were charging so much and how they make so much money when it seems like you could get a group of people that could do the same type of thing that live in Corvallis, that know the Corvallis area and have connections with different, like, is that what they're doing? Like, I feel like that could be done so much easier and cheaper rather than get some big company that seems like they're taking a ton of money away from.
Well, they're outsourcing it. It's like when you go through the drive-through at McDonald's and you place your order and then you're talking to somebody in Fargo who's on the headset in their living room, and they're putting the order into a computer, and then it's getting made in your local McDonald's. So they've outsourced the NIL thing. And to answer your question, it's all of the above. One of the ways that collectives, NIL collectives, raise money is they go to the fan base and say, hey, who wants to give a recurring donation every month, you know, $50 a month, recurring donation. Those are called memberships. Right now, I'm told Oregon State has about $240,000 a year that comes in on those recurring small donations. That's a nice chunk of money. $240,000, you can get yourself a tight end in today's market. And that's being paid for by people who are pledging $25 or $50 and just have a recurring membership or a recurring donation going on. Beyond that, there's larger gifts that are given by donors that go into that collective. And yet that's a relationship business. So you have to have somebody in your team who's like cultivating the relationship and calling up Wade and Joe McGee and whoever else is making these donations and saying, hey, Wade, we really appreciate you. You know, can we get you a couple of tickets to the game? Thanks for your $150,000 donation last year. We'd love to have it again this year. Can we count on you? You know, you have to have somebody who is in that business. Beyond that, there is the individual NIL deals for individual athletes. So it's like Trent Walker at Oregon State. He might really like Jamba Juice, right? And so somebody, the collective Blueprint Sports or whoever the collective is, might go to Jamba and say, hey, we want to get Trent Walker a deal. He will endorse Jamba in exchange. You pay him this much money a year and they take a commission on that deal. And then another way is they go out to major retailers, major companies like Target and others nationally, their national accounts, and they say, hey, you know, we can offer you, because we represent Penn State, North Carolina State, Oregon State, we can offer you something that you can't get elsewhere. We can offer you sort of these NIL endorsements and sponsorships in multiple athletic departments, and you just buy it with one, you write one check to Blueprint, and you're buying like three or four different schools. And so, you need a staff of three or four people. Those are employees. There's a cost to that. And so Oregon State and others have weighed that and said, all right, that's going to cost us a few $100,000 to do that. You know, would it be better if we just paid a management fee of a couple $100,000 a year to do this? And then you do a revenue split and they're getting a commission and you're getting a share. And there are some companies that have very good splits. Lockerverse, the deal that Lockerverse offered Oregon State was $288,000 a year guaranteed. Anything above $288,000, Oregon State gets 75% of it, Stephen. Lockerverse gets 25%. It's a 75-25% split to the moon. And that's it. It's a very simple deal. This other deal with Blueprint offered Blueprint a lot more upside, to the point where if the deal got to, like, if you raise $3 million, Oregon State was getting, you know, less money than Blueprint was getting. And so it's, you know, it wasn't quite a 50-50 split. And so I think that's where it gets off the rails with deals like that. Let's go to Ryan, who's in Ridgefield. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Hey, John, thanks for taking my call. Hey, November 1st, the NCAA came out and they said that that if you're a coach or associated with any university, that you can bet on professional sports now. And I wanted to know your opinion. Is that going to cause problems? For example, what if Dante Moore goes to Dan Lanning and say, hey, Dan, you know, I'm from Ohio. My Browns are playing. Here's some of my NIL money. You know, to put a bet. Thanks, John.
Yeah, it's interesting. The NCAA approved the rule change. It allows athletes and staff members to bet on professional sports. It does not change the rule forbidding athletes from betting on college sports. Despite the change, the NCAA is also saying, look, we don't endorse betting on sports, particularly for student athletes. But you know what's happening here. They're getting a lot of pressure from these sports wagering companies that a lot of the athletic departments are in partnership with. And they see the hypocrisy of saying, oh, we're in partnership with, but we don't let our athletes bet on this. That's a bad look. Like, it, you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff there. It also extends to Division II and Division III. And it comes as NCAA enforcement caseloads involving these betting violations have skyrocketed. You've got, you know, basketball players, football players. It's problematic. I don't like it. I don't like even the idea or the hint of it being around the athletes. And you don't want to encourage your athletes to be gambling. Shouldn't be encouraging college kids to go gamble. And I think that's what the NCAA is doing by changing this rule.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Any good Halloween costumes? What are your kids going to be, Steven?
The little one is going to be an Ender Dragon from Minecraft.
Okay.
So he's pretty psyched about that. He has his costume already. The older one has not fully decided yet. I feel like we're at that point where you need to figure out what you're doing, but he has not made the decision yet. I don't even know what's in the running, to be honest with you.
It's going to be a last-minute call.
Yeah. It's going to be what I used to do, just like put on a jersey. That's what I used to do. I used to be like a, you know, a soccer player. I would just wear my soccer jersey or basketball, whatever. That's what I did.
My dad had, because he had played professional baseball, he had all these minor league baseball jerseys, and he had spring training jerseys because he was in AAA with the New York Mets. He had the actual New York Mets AAA jerseys, and he had a Pittsburgh Pirates sleeveless, the old sleeveless look that the Pirates had in the late 1960s, early 70s. And he had these flannel baseball jerseys that he later auctioned off everything. He auctioned them off on Sotheby's, the auction house. And some of these jerseys sold for like thousands of dollars. When we were kids, Steven, we used to wear them on Halloween. like I want to be a New York Met outfielder. And so I would wear an actual New York Mets jersey from like the late 1960s season.
That is sick. I would wear those all the time.
It was, and here's how it got, because my dad went to sell these things. I probably should have just bought them all from him. And he said to me, he said, before I auction these off, do you want any of them? And there was a really, like, the Mets jerseys are cool. And the Pirates sleeveless jersey is, that's a very unique looking flannel. But they were all worth, like, some of those jerseys were worth like $2,000 or $3,000, okay? Even like, because it was used in a spring training game or whatever. And he had, though, a Durham Bulls jersey from like the 1965 season. My dad had played shortstop for the Durham Bulls. And the movie Bull Durham obviously was kind of near and dear for that reason. Like, you know, my dad was like, oh, we actually played in this stadium. Oh, I remember this. Or here's what I remember about being there. And I like that Durham Bulls jersey. But I didn't want to tell my dad that because I didn't want to keep him from selling it. So I went online to the auction house and I bid on it and won the auction. I paid $600 for it, which I was happy to pay $600 for it because some of those other ones were really expensive. But I wore that Durham Bulls jersey for Halloween several years when I was a kid. So nobody knew that, like, the movie Bull Durham had not come out. But that what I remember about those flannel jerseys is how itchy they were. They were just kind of itchy on your skin. You had to wear an undershirt underneath it. You couldn't just put it on. But that was kind of cool. But our kids, the 9-year-old is going to be a cowgirl. She's got her own style. She kind of looks like, you know, one of the, like the cow, like Woody. And I don't know what the girl is on Toy Story, but kind of looks like cowgirl of that style.
Jessie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of looks like that. And then the 11-year-old is going to be a lifeguard, which I think is a brilliant costume because it's just kind of like you don't have to wear a mask. You know, you just hit, she got herself a lifeguard shirt. She's got a whistle to wear around her neck. She's going to put like sunblock on under her eyes and wear sunglasses. And she's going to be a lifeguard in October. So those are the costumes that we're rocking right now. And then the girls asked me, they were like, hey, on that Friday, because we have a show that Friday, Halloween is on a Friday. They said, do you want to go trick-or-treating with us, Dad? Because we're going to go trick-or-treating right at 6 o'clock. And as luck would have it, we're off air at like 5:55. And so I said, I absolutely want to go trick-or-treating with you because I just don't know how many more years they're going to do it, Stephen. Like, how many more you got in you with the little one?
Yeah, the little one, I mean, he's only 6, so he's probably got a good, you know, 5-6 years at least. Yeah. Minimum. Because I feel like I kind of stopped when I was like 10 or 11, maybe 12.
I think 12 is the cutoff.
I stopped a little earlier. 13? Like I didn't get it. I don't get Halloween. I don't understand.
What do you mean you don't get it?
Why do I have to go work to go get this candy when I can just go to the grocery store and buy candy that I want? Like, I got to dress up in a costume that I don't feel comfortable. Like, I don't feel comfortable dressing up in weird clothes or even nice clothes necessarily. I like to wear my Nikes. I like to wear my sweats, you know, my joggers. I don't want to have to dress up and, like, have to earn this candy when I can just go out and get the candy that I want when other people are, you know, handing out candy corn or they're handing out, you know, Three Musketeers, which I don't want to mess with. I don't want those. I want a Snickers. I want a Twix. I want a Reese's. I don't want to mess with the other stuff. So I don't know. I never got it. I never understood it. So I stopped a little earlier.
Well, here's the thing. Here's how the custom works. In case you're Mork from Ork or you just woken from a coma and you don't understand Halloween, what Steven is saying is children wear costumes. They go house to house in their neighborhood. They knock on the door or ring the doorbell. They say trick or treat to the people who answer. And then the person who opens the door gives the kids a treat, which is usually candy. Some people will say trick, like, but basically that would mean you're performing a prank, but none of the kids coming to the door want a prank. They want a candy bar. And you signal your participation by leaving the porch light on. If your porch light is off, you ain't playing. I am a little perplexed about the origin of this one. It goes back to Scotland and Ireland, which, basically, kids used to go door to door and put on a small performance that was rewarded with food or treats. It goes back to the 16th century.
Like a little dance or something?
Yeah, a little, you know, they basically, you know how like people used to go Christmas caroling, you know, and maybe some people still do. But like in 19th century Scotland and Ireland, people would go house to house and they would recite verses in exchange for food. And then the interjection of trick or treat apparently was first recorded in Ontario, Canada, 1917. So, you know, this is a Western and European thing. And now I don't know what happens. What's next? Where is this going beyond getting candy? But it seems like the kids have taken it for granted. I'm getting no performance these days at the door when I open the door. I'm getting kids who stare at me, barely say trick or treat, and open the damn bag. And so if I can for a moment, just tell parents and children out there as a public service announcement, and this is coming from a guy who gives away full-size candy bars, when you come to the house, show me a little effort with the costume. As these kids that get up around 13, 14, 15, I will accept a 16-year-old, a 15-year-old on my porch with a bag if you're wearing a costume. But if you're just coming and you're not wearing a costume, folks, you're begging. So I need a little effort from you in the costume area. I also am a little old school, so I want a little bit of politeness. You know, how about a thank you when I toss you a full-size Butterfinger? You know, that took some effort from me. They don't, how about a little, hey, thanks,
nothing
at,
worse
on
than
your
a,
way out.
Nothing worse than a no, you know, they don't give a thank you afterwards. I'm with you. We have to alliterate that to our kids so much. It's like, make sure you're saying thank you or else you don't get to do this.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Like, you know, my house, we've got steps that come up to the door. You've walked those steps. It's not an easy trip up the steps.
It's a grind. It's a grind.
Yeah. I've had delivery people who pull up and they look, I can see it on their face. Guys driving in a, bringing a refrigerator. It's two guys going to carry a refrigerator up like 27 steps. And they look at you like, what? You know, really? Like, come on. And so if the kids are willing to climb the steps, I'm willing to play the game. Like, you know, this isn't like going to the, you know, like summiting Mount Everest, but just come up 27 steps, wear a costume and offer me a, some semblance of enthusiasm or engagement. We make our kids, when we go into a restaurant, order for themselves. I don't want the parent going trick or treat in the background. Okay. It goes so far. I want the kid to be able to be like, trick or treat. Look up, look at me in the eye. Okay. Here's a candy bar. Thanks. You're welcome. Have a great night.
So you'll always have the porch light on if you're home.
Yeah.
You'll never just turn it off just so you don't participate.
Well, I tell you what I do when I want to participate. I just put the whole bowl out. We have learned a lesson. We have learned a lesson in putting the whole bowl out. And it's not the kids. The kids are not the thieves. The, you know, the kids, it's interesting because we have all kinds of security. We have too many cameras and sound to it. And so I've been privy to some pretty interesting discussions by 7 or 8 or 9 year olds who encounter a full bowl of candy bars at the top of the porch. They have scaled to the top of the porch. No one else is around. They are alone with the bowl of candy with a friend. And you can hear them going, you know, it says, the sign says, take one. And you can hear them kind of discussing with each other whether or not, you know, should we take another one? No, it says take one. And I am impressed with the ethics of kids. Like, with no one watching, these kids, by and large, don't take advantage of the system. And I appreciate that. Maybe they're scared, but I appreciate that. What I have seen, though, is a grown adult who came with his kids. They went up to the door and got a candy bar. The grown adult took a mental picture of the scene and came back later and tried to take the whole bowl. And I got the guy on camera, and I happened to open the door because I got an alert. Someone's at the door, and I thought, oh, I'm here. Some kid's getting candy. I open the door. There's a grown-up adult, guy in his 40s. He's down on a knee, and he's harvesting peanut M&Ms, Reese's peanut butter cups, and Baby Ruth's, and Three Musketeers into a plastic bag. He's just harvesting the whole bowl, and he sees me. His eyes get wide as saucers, and he tries to run down the stairs. Now it's 27 stairs, right? It's not easy. Tries to run down the stairs. He damn near falls. And I thought to myself, I'm going to get sued. This guy is going to fall, going to get sued. And I just yelled at him, have a nice night. Happy Halloween, whatever. But it's like, really, man, you're going to steal the whole bowl? You're a grown up. I expected that from like the 5 year olds who, by the way, weren't that way. They were actually polite.
See, I would expect it from the teenagers. The teenagers, they, you know, they think they're above the law. They think they're tough and funny. And, you know, I think the little kids actually are pretty good at following directions. Yeah. Like, if you tell them, hey, take one, it says take one, they would take one.
I think the teenagers of today have grown up around cameras to the point where I think they're not like you and I, Stephen. Imagine if there were cameras around when we were kids.
Not great.
It wouldn't have been good. They would have locked me up at 13 years old. Like, but these kids have grown up around it. I think they feel like they're always being watched. And I don't know what that's like.
Because when I was in high school, that's when like cell phones kind of were becoming a thing. I got my first cell phone as a junior in high school, and I was like the first kid with a camera phone. So like I kind of grew up with like people taking pictures on their phone, but it wasn't like people recording things. And so I'm sure there are some interesting pictures that were taken at some point around those times. But you're right. I think these kids, they're so used to being recorded now. Like they know, like, okay, if I go up to this door, there's going to be a Ring camera and they're going to be watching me. So I can't be doing anything stupid.
We've got the compound. We've got sort of the high level security cams, and you can see it's like on a big dome, captures everything in HD. You know, there's nothing that happens. The dog can't do anything in the backyard without me knowing about it. All right, we're going to play some Punch It audio here. Lane Kiffin, Rob Akey, Josh Pate talking about Dan Lanning. Would he ever leave Oregon? Cam Newton talking about mediocre coaching in the SEC. All of that is part of Punch It Audio.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth Headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
The Oregon Ducks have first world problems. They beat Wisconsin. Beat them going away in the driving rain. Not really a game. And everybody's being critical of Oregon going, I don't know, not impressive. Joel Klatt sees what I see. He thinks Oregon reminds him a lot of Ohio State from last year. What does Klatt mean?
Kind of an ugly win against Wisconsin, Oregon, this last week. Offense just wasn't quite what I thought that they would be. Although Wisconsin does have a decent defense. That's one thing about Wisconsin. Now, Wisconsin couldn't do anything on the offensive side of the football, so the game was never in doubt. But I do like Oregon still, and there's this part of me that thinks about Oregon, and I think about the way Ohio State grew from their midseason loss a year ago, in particular on the defensive side. And I think about the urgency with which Dan Lanning coaches and the fact that this guy is what I would call a stone turner. Here's what a stone turner is. Like, he will turn over every single stone to figure out what's going wrong, what's going right, how are we going to get better. The guy just looks in every nook and cranny. He is a tireless, energetic worker. And so because of that loss, I do think that they're going to be able to focus and evaluate and develop past that.
Look, I think it's simpler than that. I think Oregon's super talented. I think they get nitpicked because we expect the world of them. And I think they're in a small room of maybe four or five teams that couldn't get to the semifinals, and we would expect, not be surprised at all if they got there. I think one of the challenges, though, is we're in a new era with 12 teams getting to the playoff, 14, 15, 16 weeks left in the season, whole bunch of games, and it's how you manage the journey there that I think matters. Ohio State managed it a little different a year ago. Well, I think we're learning from it.
The thing it would be is, with the way this season's kind of gone, Ohio State had two losses, they still made the playoff. Can Oregon afford another loss?
It depends.
I mean, yes, obviously a lot has to play it out, but I feel like this year, John, there's some tough, there's some top-level teams that are going to have one loss, and I think Oregon, if they have two losses, they may not make the playoff.
If Washington and USC continue to win, it helps Oregon, because beating those two teams at the end of the year is going to be something. You know, if you go into Iowa and you suffer a one-point loss, but then you run the rest of the way, and, you know, in Washington and USC only lose to Oregon, those wins look better at the end. I still maintain that two lost teams in the Power Four are going to be hard to keep out of this playoff. But, yeah, I mean, the math in the end is going to tell us that, you know, only 12 teams can get in. Your group of five, group of six can have one team. It's, you know, is it going to be Memphis? Is it going to be San Diego State? Someone else? We'll see. Dan Orlovsky says he's done with the tush push. Did you see this? Jalen Hurts fumbled on the tush push, but the refs bailed him out by calling forward progress.
I've never really had a passionate take or feeling on either side of the whole tush push thing, but after watching this, I'm out on it. I can respect it and appreciate for everything that it's, you know, been accomplished and whatnot, but we can't have this play in football where it's clear and obvious fumble to every human being that has ever watched a game, but for some reason in a whistle and whatnot, it's just a play right now that I think is impossible for officials to defend fairly, I guess, or equally. So this play for me is got to be one that we move away from.
Yeah, move away from the play? Yes, I'm with Orlovsky. I'm with everybody else. This doesn't look like football to me. It looks like rugby. I think it's a very simple fix. You just you tell teams they can't aid a ball carrier.
But why can't the refs officiate it correctly?
I think it's because there's only one team really running it the way that the Eagles run it. I think it's part of it. I think that it's a tough play to officiate because it's not about, like, so much about sports is about spacing. This is the by definition, this tush push is the anti-spacing play.
Right.
Everybody's jammed together. You can't get an angle. You can't get an angle. Like, and so I think it's really hard to see what's going on and tell you, like, if we didn't have it in slow motion, do you know how hard it would be to see what's going on?
True. But they can't, like, they don't call false starts. They don't call the offensive offsides.
That's what they should do.
The fumble on Sunday was atrocious. Like, he was still moving, and he fumbles, and like, nope, down. It's like, I mean, you can't even defend the play when they cheat on it. Now the refs are cheating on it. How are you really going to defend it?
I think the big fix to that would be, if you want to officiate it, you got to go to replay every time they run it. And they can rule, you know, you had a false start on it, back up 5 yards. You got to be a stickler with it if you're going to keep it. But I just say get rid of it. It's not aesthetically pleasing. There have been changes to sports over the years that have been about increasing the beauty of the game. Pass interference, can't touch, you know, fouls in basketball. Very offensive-minded sport, but this tush-push thing, doesn't work. Rob Akey, Oregon State. He's got a quarterback controversy. Who's he going to play at quarterback? Jabari Johnson or Malik Murphy? Here's Rob Akey.
Well, I'd say the same thing that I said, I think, after the game. I think we've got a quarterback room that's done a hell of a job. And I think you've seen the two of them continue to grow as the season has gone on, and that's going to continue to be the case.
He's going to play them both, folks. That's what I'm hearing there. If you could keep Malik Murphy engaged mentally, you need his arm. But I'm gonna ride with Jabari Johnson getting at least 50% of the snaps. And I'm going to bring Malik Murphy in to enhance the pass game. And I'm going to go with, hey, which of these guys is riding the hot hand? You think about it, they're very different players. And I think if you can use them, you can keep defenses guessing just a little bit. It is a little bit like being the conductor of an orchestra. It's not an orthodox thing, but this is a weird season for Oregon State. They're playing a game against Washington State this week, where, you know, I don't expect Oregon State to win this game because of the way Washington State's been playing. So do what you have to do if you're Rob Akey to keep Washington State guessing.
And how is Washington State only 3.5-point favorites?
Yeah.
This one?
That spread's
wrong. That seems weird.
That spread's wrong. What about Dan Lanning in Oregon? Josh Pate says Dan Lanning's not leaving Oregon.
I don't think so. When you're the head coach at Oregon in the post-Mario Cristobal era, it's important to note that. They lost Mario to Miami. And you got to understand what that does to someone like Phil Knight. When Phil Knight and Oregon believe we've got our guy and he says bye, the next guy you bring in, once you decide he's the guy and they've long since decided Lanning is the guy, he's not leaving. You're doing whatever it takes. So in their case, what it means is you got to deal with Oregon and you got to deal with Phil Knight. It's not that you're in prison there. Dan could leave anytime he wants to. The amount of money you're leaving on the table, if you leave the head coaching job at Oregon right now, is more than LSU or any program would be willing to pay someone to coach football.
Here's the other thing. It's one of the best 3 or 4 jobs in the country. I look at Ohio State and I say that is in that category. I think Oregon's in that category. I think Miami's in that category just because of the NIL support and the fact that, you know, at Miami and the ACC, you have such inherent advantages. You know, Michigan could be one of those jobs. I have to look more about it. You know, and the problem I'm having is, as I mentioned this, I'm not mentioning SEC schools. Has the SEC become a tougher place to live and exist because of the disparity in revenue that the Big Ten is going to have over them, particularly if they get this $1 billion, private capital deal? And they're able to draw upon that. Alabama, probably in that category. I think that's the SEC job I'd put up in there. LSU is a good job, but it's not Ohio State. It's not Oregon. And you just have inherent advantages at those places and security. And I don't think Dan Lanning is forever at Oregon because I think he's got ambition that goes beyond Oregon. But I'll tell you what he has privately told me, and then I've written. He told me that because that he dragged his family around, his 3 sons and his wife, dragged them all around the country, changing zip codes like 11 times. First person who told me Dan Lanning would stay at Oregon for a long time was his dad, Don. Don told me, he said, I think you're going to be surprised. He said, I think Daniel will stay there a long time. And he was speaking as a grandparent to 3 grandsons, and Dan Lanning and his wife, Sophia, have sort of made a pledge to the kids. You will graduate from the same high school. All 3 of you are going to go to the same high school, trying to give their kids just this normal life in an abnormal way. And so I think until the youngest gets through high school, I think Lanning's at Oregon. After that, keep an eye on the Kansas City Chiefs. I think it's the job that Lanning would leave. I don't think there's another college job that would call his name unless something in the ecosystem changes. Connor Orr with Sports Illustrated says it makes sense that college coaches are looking at the NFL. There's a report out there that Steve Sarkisian's interested in getting out of Texas and going to the NFL.
Well, I think every college coach, after seeing the bloodbath over the last 2 weeks, is probably more interested in the NFL, which is funny that the NFL is all of a sudden some sort of a safe haven for coaching. But some of the people kind of inside the coaching industry that I've talked to do think we're far enough away from Matt Rhule and Urban Meyer to take another chance on a college head coach. And Sarkisian's name certainly came up. So did Marcus Freeman's name from Notre Dame. I think those guys are firmly on NFL radars, and I think those guys, if the right opportunity arose, would certainly be interested in one of those jobs. I mean, Brian Kelly, James Franklin, all these guys losing gigs at this point with these massive buyouts. Why wouldn't you look toward the NFL? It's such a less complicated coaching job right now.
Not just the coaching part of it. How about the with the transfer portal and free agency? You know, unrestricted free agency every year, or contracts and a GM who's looking over your shoulder whose job it is to get you talent. There's something about the NFL that appeals to guys, and I do think you'll see more coaches look at it. Lane Kiffin was asked how he deals with the rumors that he's going to leave Mississippi. Kiffin will be rumored to be going to Florida and Auburn and LSU in the coming days.
And so I just told him, hey, this is a product of how you guys play is why they see the way that you play. So then people are like, fans are like, we want that system. And they say coach. But really, it's the system of the players and the assistant coaches and what a good job they do. So I just told him that's a compliment to them. And I think it's easier for them nowadays because, remember, basically the same thing happens to them. They have a good game. What happens? You know, our freshman receiver has a good game Saturday night. He's got three calls from places telling him, hey, come here, we'll give you more money, you know, pre-portaling, you know, before the portal opens. That's what happens. And so they deal with this all the time, places saying, oh, come here, you'll get more money because they're performing well. So I don't think it's that big a deal to him.
Doesn't think it's that big a deal. It's still a distraction, and it will be a distraction. And I think he's playing the game, and he knows what he's doing, and it's Lane Kiffin. That's just kind of what Lane Kiffin does. I have not seen this kind of carnage maybe ever before the month of November. We're still in October, and you've got so many openings, and still there will be more to come. I kind of am looking at jobs like Oregon State. It's not a prime job, right? It's not going to be a job that, you know, a sitting coach in the Power Four is interested in. I'm looking at jobs like Oregon State, and I'm going, this might benefit an Oregon State hire more than it benefits LSU, more than it benefits a Penn State, more than it benefits, you know, Florida. They're all going to be chasing the high-profile candidates. And if you're in Oregon State, maybe you're sitting back and you're going, hey, is there a sitting head coach who is interested in the simplicity of going to the Pac-12 where you don't have to play Alabama or Georgia, Ohio State, or Michigan? You know, is there a coach out there that is in the mold of a Sean Lewis, who J.D. Wicker hired at San Diego State? Is there a coach out there? I thought, you know, if you look at the jobs, I mean, I think Fresno State, San Diego State, UNLV, all made really good hires in the last cycle. And New Mexico as well, you know, with Jason Ertz, like really good hires with up-and-coming coaches or coaches who were kind of looking for another chance.
What? And I look at Oregon State, John, and one of these bounce back coaches, if they wanted to go to Oregon State, you can win 7 to 9 games and you're probably going to be safe. Where you look at all these teams, you know, that had all this pressure on them, you know, James Franklin's winning 10 games a year. He's fired. So it may be one of those cases where you could get a bounce back coach who says, look, I don't need to have to deal with this pressure of having to win 10, 11 games a year. I can win 8, 9 or even 7 games sometimes, and I'd be okay at Oregon State. Like, they would still celebrate me, and we still have a chance to make the playoff when we do bounce through and come through and get, you know, that 10, 11 win season.
I am looking at, you know, Oregon State's job in the Pac-12. I'm looking at Colorado State, and I'm thinking those two schools have to be thinking a lot like San Diego State, Boise State, and others. And, you know, okay, how do we get relevant? How do we How do we punch above, you know, the weight of a group of five, group of six conference? But I think they're going to have a cool pool of candidates that will be a little more interesting than it is in most years because of all the carnage. I think there's going to be some guys out there that are going, hey, I want to coach again. And I'm not talking about Ed Orgeron. I just think that's that, you know, Ed Orgeron and his agent are busy trying to get his name out there. That's not the place. That's not the space that you want to be in if you're Oregon State. Leave it here. We got more ahead. You got the BFT.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Tiago Splitter, Trailblazers coach.
Yeah, I mean, this is... I promise you guys, this is what we're going to do every night. We're going to compete. And, you know, they compete tonight for sure.
They compete. They competed. Blazers playing well. People have been very positive about the Blazers. Anthony Edwards, Steve Kerr, James Harden, all saying nice things about the Trailblazers.
Ain't no more gimme wins versus Portland, man. Chauncey got those guys picking up full court, 94 feet every play. And then they rotating bodies, like five in, five out. Somebody else picking you up full. Somebody else picking you up full. Hey, I'm not going to lie, it's crazy. Then they go five smalls, and everybody's 6'6", 6'9", through 6'6". So I'm not going to lie, I love the team.
Tonight was not about that. It was about Portland and what they've built and the length and athleticism and the style of play. And they were brilliant. And so, you know, I would be embarrassed to you know, sit here and blame fatigue when a team just came out and just took it to us. So it was about them and their great play.
They played extremely hard, you know, for the entire game. You know, they pick you at full court. They try to, you know, cause turnovers. And, you know, offensively, they crash the glass, and they just try to disrupt the game. And they're very, very aggressive. So
there it is. Lots of nice things being said about the Blazers. Does that make you want to go out, Stephen, and find a prop bet on the Blazers over-under?
John, I do, yes. No, I don't know about the prop bet, but I will say this. The Blazers are really fun, and I can't remember the last time I was like, I actually liked the Blazers like this. Like, it's been at least 10 years since I've looked at a Blazer team, and I thought, you know what? I like all these players on this team. Like, they all play hard. They all play the right way. They're playing a fun style of basketball. I mean, how many years have we talked about the defense sucking so bad? This year, John, they are, you know, small sample size, obviously, three games, but they are averaging, forcing 22.7 turnovers per game from their opponents. The next in the NBA is 18. They're almost five turnovers forced per game, more than anybody in the NBA, because they're picking up 94 feet and they're manning you up and they're turning you. They're just making it tough. They're making life difficult. I mean, in the second quarter against the Clippers, you know, they're a bunch of veteran-laden guys. They're the oldest team in the league. They wanted no part of it. They just said, look, man, this is annoying. And then in the second half, they kind of played bully ball against the Blazers and pushed them around. But the Blazers are coming out, and they're being long and athletic, and they're making it life very hard for these teams. It is a really fun style. Offensively, they kind of stink in the half court, but that means they want a fast break, and they want to be in transition, and that's how they score a lot of their buckets. Like, I am actually excited for tonight's game. Like, they play the Lakers. Like, I actually can't wait to go home and watch that game at 7:30. Like, a lot of times, you know, I did it because I have to. I am actually enjoying this team, and I can't
Whoa,
wait.
You're
actually,
in it.
I actually want to watch the game tonight. This hasn't happened for years. So, like, I'm excited about it.
Just that enthusiasm in general is infectious. And that's what happens when a team plays well. And people in Oklahoma City can attest to this. You know, the Thunder caught lightning in a bottle, and there were people who watched the Thunder in the last two seasons and play deep into the playoffs and then win it all. And I had people who were longtime older Blazer fans who said, gosh, that Oklahoma City fan base reminds me of Portland in the 1977 season and the euphoria that Blazer fans had in the 90s and getting to the conference finals. And I think that's a really cool thing, like to seize upon the enthusiasm that you have as a fan base and the identity that you carve out and to have that be part of the community and people from, you know, people from the Blazer fans from the 70s
80s and 90s will tell you that when this team is good, it's bigger than the Ducks. It's bigger than the Beavers. It encapsulates both fan bases. And it doesn't matter what college you graduated from. A lot of people are just Blazer fans. And they're Blazer fans when they can be proud of the team. It's been really hard in recent years for Blazer fans out there who have watched their team kind of struggle and sputter and underachieve and not be all that great. And it's just, I think it's been a really difficult thing.
And that's why it's so unfortunate that this gambling scandal happened, because it brought back all those feelings that you just talked about, John, of people were starting to get on board and say, okay, like, I'm willing to, you know, buy into this team a little bit. And then you get, you know, gambling scandal with the head coach where he's may or may not be giving out information. And it kind of brought back all those old feelings. But what I'll say is this is, like, Chauncey does deserve some credit for how he's kind of the way he wanted this team to play, and he wanted to institute a style where they're going to go full court and they're going to pressure up teams, and it's a fun style of basketball. Now Tiago Splitter has ran with that, it's hard to change a style within that sort of time frame, but he's ran with it as well. And this team, they may not make the playoffs, they may, you know, they'll probably make the play-in. I would guess they may not even make the play-in, but they are playing the right way. They're playing hard. They're playing for one another. And I think you're right on that with Trailblazer fans. Like, they recognize when their team plays hard and plays for each other. And that's exactly what this team does. It is, I will say, it's an entertaining watch to watch the Portland Trailblazers go out and play basketball.
Are they a playoff team?
I'm going to go with yes. They're an 8 seed.
They're a 4-1 shot to make the playoffs right now in DraftKings.
Last night was a perfect.
Don't tell Chauncey Billups that.
No, he'll tank at the end of the season. Last night was a perfect example. They lost the game to the Clippers, John. The Clippers are a good team, one of the best defensive teams. The Blazers shot 37% in the game. The Clippers shot 52% in the game. Yet the Trailblazers were in it for the entire 48 minutes. Because they caused a lot of turnovers, they got to the free throw line. Their defense just is they're really elite defensive team, like elite. I would say, you know, top five defense in all of the
NBA.
What
do they need to be a playoff team in your mind? Because being elite defensively gets you halfway there,
right?
Maybe a little more.
Offensively, they have to figure some things out in the half court. If they don't get a shot up within the first 10 seconds of the shot clock because they're in transition, they struggle mightily. A lot of it is, you know, they set some screens, it doesn't work. And then there's five on the shot clock, and they pass to Shaedon Sharpe. And he's the one guy that can kind of create his own space and rise above people and take contested jump shots. And he's been missing those. And so the offense looks very bad. And the offense is not great right now. But what I'll say is, defensively into the NBA, half the battle is just trying, and half the battle is effort night in and night out. And Tiago said in that clip, we're going to bring effort every night. And I think that's going to get the Blazers some wins that they're not expecting to get.
Really fun to be talking about the Blazers on this show. It just is. And because it adds a layer, and it's been hard. Look, I was thinking about this too, because we, you know, on this 750 game in Portland on this flagship station, we used to have the Mariners games on for years and years when they weren't any good. It was a garbage, you know, product. It wasn't very good. We'd get preempted once in a while from a Mariners game, and that it kind of stunk. When the Blazers are good, it adds a layer to this time of year and gives us several months of things to talk about that people are excited about. I'm going to go one further though on this Chauncey Billups scandal. I don't want to say it's a good thing that Chauncey Billups got indicted. I'm not saying that. Okay. I want to be clear. I don't want you to at me. This isn't good that someone gets indicted, somebody gets arrested. Not saying it's good. I am going to say, though, that I'm interested in seeing someone else coach this team. And I think for the new owner, Tom Dundon, somebody asked me in the Monday mailbag today at johnconzano.com. They said, oh, well, this will make Dundon not want to own the team. I kind of think the opposite of it. The more I think about it, this is not going to be that much different than politics where somebody blames their predecessor for all the problems, you know, at the White House or with the economy or healthcare or whatever's going on. Dundon can blame everything on Jody Allen and Burt Cold. He can look at them and say, Tweedledee and Tweedledum are running this organization. Guess what? We have a grown up in the room now. This is going to be great. You're not going to have any of the nonsense of the past. This isn't good for Chauncey Billups. But I actually think getting someone else to coach the team and Tiago Splitter saying the right things, someone else to coach the team is good. And we're going to get a look at, you know, what, a new coach can do with this roster.
And I also think there's a problem, though, as the trade deadline comes along. I don't foresee a situation, Stephen, where they make a move to get better to get into the playoffs, because there's just not an owner there, and that deal with Dundon will not be closed. I think that Joe Cronin will probably sit on his hands at the deadline.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think there's a move really to be made. The only move would be as if Jeremy Grant continues to play the way he is. He's coming off the bench and he's scoring, you know, 20 points a night. Some team wanted to go at him, but it would just be a cap shedding situation right there. I'd be careful with what I said. I think you're right. I don't see a move where they look to improve the roster necessarily, but I think you're right on with Chauncey and Tiago Splitter. Obviously not a good situation for Chauncey. If he's not guilty, hopefully he gets off not guilty. If he's guilty, he's guilty. But for the Blazers on the court, it might have been an upgrade. Like, Chauncey wasn't one of the best coaches in the NBA. He just wasn't. Like, X's and O's wise, he wasn't drawing up anything schematically that was impressive. He was a motivation guy. He was a guy that just got to the players, and players liked him as a dude, and he could kind of lean on. I think Tiago can kind of draw up maybe some stuff later on in the season that could schematically be a little bit different. So they may have actually upgraded at head coach, dare I say, or at least I want to give it a chance to see that it could happen. I don't know that it can get worse by putting Tiago Splitter in there as a head coach.
Yeah, you can see somebody else coach the team. It's one of the jokes that was made early on in the day. There were two jokes that came out of the indictment of Chauncey Billups and the FBI knocking on his door. The first joke was, hey, our coach gets up earlier than your coach. And the second one was, well, we're going to get a chance to see somebody else coach the team. None of those take into account how serious this is for Chauncey Billups. And what?
I want to ask you a question about Chauncey Billups real quick. I've seen a lot of stuff about the Clutch Sports sweatshirt he was wearing.
Yeah, totally intentional.
You think it was intentional by Clutch Sports to put that on?
100.
You don't think he just, it was because he rolled out of bed? Like they arrested him at his house. That's what he was wearing.
They brought him those clothes and he walked out of there. He said, I need, you know, what he's saying to Clutch Sports is, do you have my back? Right? Because, you know, he's not, you know, just like Gilbert Arenas, I'm not going down alone, you know. And I actually think the NBA players who were brought into this, particularly Chauncey Billups, are brought into this for a reason. I think the FBI is bringing him in, A, because he was there. He was in the room, and if there was bad stuff going on in the room, you shouldn't be in the room. And secondarily, I think he's being brought in as part of this because I think they know they can possibly use him to get to who they really want. They don't really want Chauncey Billups, but they use the NBA angle to, I think, get a lot more attention on this story and attention on the arrest. But I think what they want is they want the crime families in New York. And if Chauncey Billups is involved with the crime families in New York, you know, the FBI and the Department of Justice they're going to squeeze until they get enough juice. Leave it here. Get the BFT.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
We're going to give you our big splash in this segment. We're going to take you right into the 5 at 5 top of the hour, an abbreviated 5 at 5, because we've got NFL football coming up right here on 750 The Game. NFL Monday Night Football. Steven, you excited about Monday Night Football? You got a little Commanders Chiefs going on?
Go for it. No, I was gonna say no action on the game. Yeah, Marcus Mariota playing. I'll have my eye on the Monday Night Football game. I'm more excited about the Blazers game tonight.
Boy,
I'm all in.
You are in it. I hope they don't break your heart. I hope that they come through for you.
I know they will though.
But how about the Commanders and Chiefs? Like, everybody, and by the way, the Commanders and Chiefs, the 3-4 Commanders against the 4-3 Chiefs. When this game came out on the schedule for Monday Night Football, this looked like it was going to be like the 6-1 Commanders against the 7-0 Chiefs. Like, this 3-4, 4-3 business is totally underwhelming for this game. Gotta say. All right. Brings us to our big splash. It's the one thing that you need to know.
This is the one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it.
Where?
Down there.
Must be
the big splash.
Well, the NBA has released a memo, sending a memo out to all 30 teams
NBA saying the quiet part out loud, that gambling comes with quote-unquote dire risks. The NBA is reassessing its measures on legal sports betting, how it should be regulated, and what types of bets should be allowed, prop bets or no, and the best ways to protect players from the risks of gambling. League memo sent to all 30 teams just 4 days after Terry Rozier and Trailblazers coach Chauncey Billups were indicted as part of a federal investigation into gambling schemes involving sports betting and poker. The league wrote in the memo that it's reviewing policies regarding injury reporting, training, and education, and putting in safety measures for players. This is definitely a correction and some damage control. But sportsbooks, by the way, in multiple states detected some unusual betting interest on the under on Terry Rozier's statistics ahead of a game. And Rozier left that game after only playing 9 minutes, citing a foot injury. The NBA investigation did not determine that Rozier did anything. The FBI and the Department of Justice looking hard. Rozier and Billups are both among the 34 people who were arrested by the FBI. And it'll be interesting. It's interesting to me that Billups and Rozier have become the face of the entire investigation. Like, Stephen, if I showed you pictures of the mobsters, the mafia guys that are involved, would you recognize any of them?
No.
Have you seen a single photo of a mafia person?
No, I have. Yeah, I have seen them. I don't recognize anybody. I only recognize Tony Soprano.
Yeah. And Polly Walnuts is in there. Polly Walnuts. Silvio's in there. All right.
So there's.
But here's, like, when this story broke, like, all over the news, it's the NBA, the NBA, the NBA. But, you know, like, the FBI and the DOJ, they announced this arrest and the indictments after the opening night. Couldn't have done that better. Like, that was well done by them.
But it's also like how Rudy Gobert is the face of COVID, because he was the first guy that got, like, was positive for COVID.
Congrats, Rudy.
Yeah, like, everyone still hates him because of that.
I'd rather be the face of COVID than the face of this FBI investigation.
Poll question.
And Chauncey's the guy they put at the center of everything. They put Chauncey at the center of the thing. And, you know, he's accused of some things here, okay? Not letting him off the hook. But when you read the indictments and the 34 arrests by the FBI, he's not the worst case scenario. In fact, you can look at, like, Damon Jones and Terry Rozier, and you can say, they come up in ways that Chauncey doesn't, like, at least by name. And so I find that interesting. And, you know, and Chauncey's, that's, I guess, part of the price of fame. All right, coming up, the 5 at 5. We got the 5 best stories in sports, plus Cam Newton talking about mediocre coaching and how it won't be tolerated in the SEC. Brian Kelly out at LSU. Leave it here.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Cam Newton banging the drum for the SEC. Brian Kelly out at LSU. Couldn't have happened to a nicer guy. Cam Newton talking about mediocrity.
You must understand, when you go to the top tier or a tier one team in the SEC, and I'm not talking about a tier one team by merely talent, skill set, or anything like that. I'm talking about tier one as far as budget allocations. When you talk about an LSU, when you talk about a University of Florida, when you're talking about an Alabama, when you're talking about a UGA, those tier one budgeted schools in the SEC, and there are more. Mediocrity or mediocre coaching will not be tolerated. You must understand that. So anybody who wants to insert their resume for a potential job interview, you must understand, if you don't have intentions to win, and I mean win yesterday, do not take that job.
Brian Kelly did some things at LSU that made him an easy target, though. And I don't think any of these coaches aim for mediocrity. But it reminds me of the Marlon Brando said this one time. He said, never surrender to the momentum of mediocrity.
because we always think about momentum in a positive way. There's different kinds of momentum. You can have momentum where things are going positive and you're doing all the little things right, and so you're constantly moving in a positive direction, moving towards your goal. You could have momentum that it's negative. You're trying to run up a hill, and all of a sudden what happens? You start sliding back down. The momentum picks up. You start to go down the hill faster and faster. That's negative momentum. But there's a momentum to mediocrity as well. And I do find more and more there are some sports entities out there that sort of, they don't strive to be mediocre, but they do a lot of things on a daily basis that add up, and you go, you know, what are they aiming for here? They're not aiming to matter. Kind of reminds me of the Mariners when they said, oh, they're just trying to win 53% of their games. That's the momentum of mediocrity. You've got to aspire to be bigger than that. And everybody, like, people will try to, like, these self-help guys will be like, oh, just try to do 1% today, 1% better today. They're just talking about momentum. Find some momentum, work towards your goals, take those small steps that are incremental that get you to the next big thing. That's all part of momentum. All right, we're going to play the 5 at 5, the 5 biggest stories in sports going on. Steven's got them. Let's go.
The 5 at 5. Number 1.
Well, speaking of mediocre, John, Oregon State's deal with Blueprint Sports, mediocre at best. And according to you, go check out what you wrote over at johncanzano.com. Oregon State,
I will.
Please do. Oregon State will be severing ties with Blueprint Sports in their deal. Also parting ways with WAD Brent Blaylock. Of course, Oregon State agreed to a deal back in August with Blueprint Sports to oversee revenue generation, fan engagement, and partnership development efforts. But that deal will be done, I believe, like you said, in a couple days officially. But they will be getting rid of Blueprint Sports, and they get rid of Brent Blaylock, who was under a lot of scrutiny from Oregon State fans on some of the decisions that he made. Probably the right choice, I would say, if you're Oregon State, to get some fan base back in your favor.
They're trying to do anything right now they can to you know, have a positive news story. They've had so much negativity around Oregon State. It's been day after day after day. Brent Blaylock and Oregon State officials were in a meeting this morning at 11 a.m., I am told. He was meeting with Scott Barnes. I'm pretty sure there were some HR officials probably involved. General counsel of the school might have been involved. They're negotiating his departure. I think it's going to be, the messaging on it is going to be, hey, this is about you know, sides parting ways. And the messaging on this Blueprint deal is going to be like, hey, they have mutually decided to part ways. I think that is all going to be formally announced tomorrow.
Does Barnes have to come out and say something?
Yes, he has to.
Because he's under a lot of fire.
Yeah, he's got to come out and own it to a certain extent. What I know in my reporting is that this was Brent Blaylock's baby. This Blueprint deal was his baby. Now, I will say, if you're Scott Barnes, you could come out and say, hey, I delegated this. I've got to have trust that when I delegate something, it's going to be done right. But that's not going to go over well. I think he has to come out and he has to say, hey, this is on me ultimately. I'm the athletic director. You know, I want to do a deal that's good for Oregon State. I want to do a deal that fans at Oregon State can believe in. And that didn't happen in this Blueprint deal. Onward, we're going better places. But I have to think that Scott Barnes has been so consumed, I think, with his role in rebuilding the Pac-12, I wonder if some of these little things that should have had his attention at Oregon State ended up in the hands of others. You know what I mean by that? I mean, it just kind of feels that way. We'll see. But Barnes has got to come out. I expect, if not tomorrow, Wednesday, Barnes should start doing some media.
Number 2.
Well, the Ravens beat the Bears 30-16 on Sunday, but the Ravens violated the NFL injury report policy regarding Lamar Jackson. Now, John Harbaugh said it was an honest mistake and nobody was trying to hide anything, but the Ravens are going to be subject to discipline by the league because they listed Jackson as a full participant in Friday's practice when in actuality, he only practiced with the scout team. Then Baltimore changed Jackson's practice participation to limited Saturday while then ruling him out on Sunday. But because of the Friday practice, everything was pointing to him as a go in the Sunday game. Now, the injury report policy states that participation on the scout team, no matter how extensive, by a player whose normal reps would be with the starters but for his mental condition, would not alter the player's proper designation as limited participation. So he should have been listed as limited participation. He was listed as a full go. The point spread went from like 7.5 to 2.5 because of the Lamar Jackson news. Now the Ravens, with all the Chauncey stuff, they are under scrutiny here because they were not properly using the injury report.
Well, there you go. You gotta follow the rules. We're going to see more of this. And it has to do with fair play, but it also has to do with their gaming partners. And I don't know. At what point are we going to see one of these leagues push back against their gaming partners and say, hey, no, you know what? We're in a partnership with you, but we're not going to do everything that gambling entities want us to do.
Number three.
And a gruesome injury on Sunday, Giants rookie running back Cam Scadaboo. He has been officially ruled out for the rest of the season after he's dislocated his ankle against the Eagles in just what was a gruesome injury. If you saw it, I hope nobody wants to go see it, but it's out there if you want to. The Giants did announce that Scadaboo has been discharged from the hospital after having successful surgery on that ankle, and he will begin rehab immediately. Scadaboo put out a statement saying, you know, he's thankful for everybody, but just sad to see Scadaboo go down. He was so fun to watch, and you know, he's a guy that we've watched the last couple of years over at Arizona State, but just a gruesome looking injury against the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, a lot of people upset watching that injury, and also, you know, the way that he runs, Stephen, I mean, is it surprising that he had an injury at all? I mean, he takes so much punishment, he looks for punishment, but yeah, it was gruesome and difficult to watch.
Number four.
Well, we talked last week about London Johnson, the former G League player who was actually drafted in the G League draft. He committed to Louisville. Well, today, former G League guard TJ Clark, he's going to be playing in college basketball, being recruited. The difference between these two, though, John, is TJ Clark actually was a G Leaguer. He played overseas professionally, and he played in the NBA Summer League this past season with the Dallas Mavericks. He is now going back to college after playing in the NBA Summer League with the Dallas Mavericks. I can't believe I'm saying that sentence. I was going through with NBA free agents that aren't a team. Why doesn't someone just go out and get Bol Bol? He only played 1 year at college. He's probably got some eligibility left. You know, the Final Four team needs a 7'3" guy on their team. Can he go back to college once LeBron retires? He only played 1 year. This is getting out of hand. We're now taking guys that played NBA Summer League and they're going back to college. Someone's got to take a stand on this. I hate all of this.
Yeah.
Summer League?
Yeah,
that's literally the NBA.
You can't do that. You can't do that. That's not a blurred line. That's crossing the line and coming back over it.
Number five.
And then we're out here in a couple minutes because of the Chiefs and the Commanders in Thursday night football. Big time spread because Jaden Daniels is out. But more importantly, John, the Blazers, they're playing the Lakers tonight, where the Blazers are on the road. 2.5-point favorites on the road. No Luka, no LeBron. Give me the Blazers, baby, all day. I'm excited.
Hey, look at you. Excited about a Blazers game. And
I can't believe how excited I am.
All right. I'm really hoping now. Now I'm going to really be sitting on the edge of my chair watching that game because I'm hoping that they don't dash your hopes like every child in the Portland metropolitan area.
You mean like they have for 38 years of my life?
Yeah. That's I'm with you. And my hope now, Stephen, is that they come through for you. And I'm going to be very disappointed and mad at them if they don't.
I really appreciate that, John. That is one of the nicest things you've ever said to me.
I wasn't that invested in them winning or losing, but now I care. You have given me reason to care. All right. Make sure you get a podcast of the show wherever you get a podcast. Make sure that you read me at johnconzano.com. Follow Steven on the social. Steven, give him your Twitter.
It is at Steven_VON.
At Steven_Vaughn, VON. We'll be back tomorrow with another great show. The Bald Faced Truth, not here for a long time, just a good time. Have a great evening, everybody.